Man, this is Deion Dawkins, man. You're listening to The Scoop on OwlScoop.com. You already know.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to The Scoop, OwlScoop.com's podcast. We're now at Season 9, Episode 31. I'm OwlScoop.com editor John DiCarlo, joined once again this week by Kyle Gauss. Kyle Gauss is back in the house. I sound like Dr. Seuss. Ramir Bond and Declan Landis. No Johnny's a Wislak. Got a lot to talk about. Hysier Miller announced his intentions yesterday to enter the transfer portal. We broke that story yesterday morning. We'll see what is coming up in the days ahead for both programs, the Temple men's and women's basketball programs. We've now had the benefit of watching two open practices for spring football. So we've got some spring football updates for you as well. Lots of mailbag questions, lots of fun stuff to get into. The mailbag has become a place of venting. We're here for you all. The Scoop, as always, is brought to you by Greenspan and Greenspan Injury Lawyers. If you've been injured while on the road or the highway and the crash was someone else's fault, the insurance company is not going to be on your side. You need us, Temple Law grads, who will fight hard to get the compensation that you deserve. We only get paid if we win. So in Pennsylvania or New York, call us today at 215-261-7359. That's 215-261-7359. And you can find them on the web at greenspans-law.com. That's greenspans-law.com. Kyle, I'm going to ask you, because you typically say that you don't listen to The Scoop when you're not on The Scoop. So are you aware, are you at all aware that we have new intro music now?
No. What's our new intro music?
You're at least smiling. I thought you were going to say, whoa, this was done without my...
I mean, fairness, this is a breach of my contract. My contract does say that I have final creative like sign off on everything Scoop related. So this is a breach of my contract.
When was this contract drawn up?
You were in a, let's just say, Malibu fueled blur haze. And I got you to sign a lifetime contract for me. People might start to question, like, what does Kyle do for Owl Scoop anymore? Does Kyle still do these things? Why is Kyle still employed? Lifetime contract. So here we are.
Wait, can you tell them again what Meg said about me in Malibu? What was her line?
My wife, when she first met you and you ordered like a Malibu and or you were drinking like a Malibu and Coke or something. She's granted, in fairness, this is a little telling about my wife as like a 22-year-old as well. At the time, she was like, I didn't know people mixed that. I thought people just drank Malibu. Like, that's what I thought that drink
was. Yeah.
I put it in the group chat for you if you want to listen to it.
Yeah. We have a group chat.
Yes, we do. You just responded to it earlier. Anyway, yes, we have new intro music. Like I said, it no longer sounds like a ripoff of a U2 guitar riff. I think Kyle is listening to it in real time right now. He looks confused.
Is this real?
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah.
Before I say what I'm about to say, did anybody like? Is this like somebody like made this? Like, did you go into like a MIDI thing and you make this? Or is this just free use music?
It's licensed.
Free use. Free, yeah, music. You bought it.
Okay. I think we should like take advantage of things that become public domain because they've been in the ether for like 100 years. You know, like Mickey Mouse became public domain because he's been around for 100 years. There has to be good music from like 1924 that could also now be used in The Scoop.
we'll be sponsored by Ovaltine.
Let's go. It was brought to you by...
I'll just say,
Depression.
Let's not be married to that music, is what I'll say. Wow. We're workshopping things. If anybody has better ideas or like an idea that they want to run through the creative director of the OwlScoop.com enterprise, please let me know.
Perfect. Perfect. Yes.
If anybody has intro music, any aspiring bands out there who are looking to
you mentioned you said Creed. That like unjokingly once like 7 years ago. You're like, hey, if your band wants to create the Alice Cooper music, as if somebody's like, guys, we have our big break. Like, I know we've been putting things together.
NXS comes calling. They're like, John, we saw the tweet. Okay, we know you're a big fan. We want to do you this favor.
Well, they need a new lead vocalist, so I don't know.
Ramir,
new lead singer of NXS.
I've been saying in years.
Well, I just always
dust off the vocal cords.
Dust
buddy.
Off the vocal cords and replace Michael Hutchins. You got to be better than JD Fortune, the guy that they had in the reality show. So
you'll be all right.
We've explored a world of possibilities now. This season 9, episode 31 of The Scoop. Okay. All right, I think in keeping with the spirit of gently phasing out the famous numbers, we'll do maybe a couple more weeks of famous number, whatever is up, whatever's on deck, and then on or around this date, which is pretty much on this date.
Well, yeah.
So famous number 31s.
I forgot his name.
How about Jamal Lewis?
Oh, that's cool.
I believe help me win a lot. Help me win a fantasy football championship.
Reggie Miller.
Oh my God. You need to look at your phone for Reggie
Miller. Greg Maddux.
Arguably, one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
He's the greatest pitcher of his generation for sure. Yeah. A goalkeeper that died in a car crash.
Pelly Lindbergh.
Yes.
Ramiro, you had a famous number 31 last week, and it was a week premature.
Wilbert Montgomery.
If you want to buy a Subaru, Honda, Accord, Hyundai, there's dealerships around here with this guy's name on it.
Oh, Mike Piazza?
Mike Piazza.
Piazza Auto Group.
That was a good one.
Jalen Mills.
Who else are you trying to look up, Declan?
I'm looking at Legion of Boom.
Who?
Legion of Boom.
Cam Chancellor.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Dog.
It's a pretty good list.
Yep, good list.
All right, so Declan, on this date.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us for this week's installment of On This Date. In 2005, we're going to start on a pretty somber note. Depending on who you are, actually.
Real quick, are you doing this as like a mix of trivia again, or is it just...
You want to do trivia?
We could do a little bit of both.
Why not? Wait, are we doing like today or the day that this will air?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. We should probably do the day that this aired. Hold on.
How quickly can you get this edited?
pretty quick. You guys fill the time here.
So it's not going to be April 2nd. We're going April 3rd now.
That's a bummer. There were some good things that happened on April 2nd.
You could do a little bit of both.
The invasion of the Falkland Islands
around this date.
It's true.
Yeah, that's that exactly. As Ramir said, it's on or around this date. Could that's be April 2nd, could be April 3rd.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm already on the next the next webpage.
Unfortunately,
so.
April 2nd left, left in the collective dust.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So Declan, on this date.
On this date, 1961. Famous actor. Did a lot of good work in the 80s and 90s. Carried over a little bit into the 2000s. Made a all-time family movie in the 2000s, I believe. Born in Brooklyn, New York.
On April 3rd, 1961.
Yep.
Eddie Murphy. Are you thinking the Nutty Professor?
No, I was thinking of Daddy Daycare.
That's your all-time family movie?
That's insane.
Beverly Hills Cop. The Golden Child.
Also, not how I would describe Eddie Murphy's life. You left out a key event that I would have included.
Yeah, he's had a couple of transgressions in his life. Very, very funny, very talented man. Very successful guy.
Yes.
But we'll go with your narrative, Declan.
Thank you very much. Hmm. On this day in 1882.
Oh, come on.
I'm cooked.
While adjusting a picture on the wall of his home in St. Joseph, Missouri, American Outlaw was shot and killed by Robert Ford.
The badass Jesse James.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, you guys got to catch up here. Just saying. In 1860, on this day, from your time.
so funny.
This government agency was launched.
Federal Bureau of Investigation?
No. Between St. Joseph, Missouri, St. Joseph, Missouri, and Sacramento, California.
And LaSalle, California.
And LaSalle, California.
Very famous government agency.
Post office.
Close.
CIA.
No. Why would that be? Why would that be close?
U.S. Mint.
The FCC.
No, it has to do with delivering mail, though.
United States Postal Service.
Did I say that?
UPS.
This is a branch of the United States Postal Service.
I have no idea. I'm done.
What?
Yeah. What branch?
The Pony Express.
Pony Express is not a branch
of
the
Postal Service.
Sure it is. We'll do one more.
Treat for Quizzo.
We'll do one more because you guys are not very good at this.
Third beer would not be happy with you.
You guys are not very good at this, unfortunately.
No, ask better questions.
No, actually, I don't, because there are only a specific number of things that happened on this day. So, you know, I don't know what you want me to do.
Yeah.
Did you get us back
I'm sure there's
the 20th
a
century?
Billion things that happened.
Yes.
Maybe not famous ones. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to get that. There you go. This person was arrested in 1996.
Oh, I already know who this is.
Will Ferrell did a version of him on SNL.
Ted Kaczynski.
Ted Kaczynski.
Oh, wow.
1996 in Montana.
Mm.
And that was a
what was his name, was John? What was his nickname?
Ted Kaczynski? The Unabomber.
Okay. Just that there, sure.
And said, that was on this date.
When you what said his nickname, I thought that he had like
Big
a nickname. Like Big T.
And that was on this day.
That was drove.
We're still working.
Still workshop.
Still workshop.
I still want to do the thing where we think of two words and we say that we're trying to guess the same word. I want
to
get that going. That's better
it has
than
to do with the news of the week.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
All right. Oh, hey.
One, two, three. Transfer portal.
Orange. Okay. Transfer portal orange. Okay.
Wait.
How do we do this? We have transfer portal and orange. Then what?
Then we're trying to guess the same word next time.
Okay.
So
transfer portal orange.
One,
two, three.
Tennessee.
Jim Boeheim.
Okay. That was better. Okay. One.
Wait. Jim Boeheim in Tennessee. What?
No, I think we got it now. Tennessee. Jim Boeheim. I think we got this. I know what I'm gonna say.
I don't want to say what I want to say.
No. Mine's just a legitimate answer.
Mine's not.
One, two, three.
Syracuse.
Yeah, there you go.
We killed it.
We've had better starts to the scoop, but
I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree. I think this is the best. I think this is the best episode ever. Yeah, well, at least so far.
Maybe we'll get another Mount Rushmore question.
Maybe.
Before we get to that, though, again, biggest news of the week, easily, Hysier Miller entering the transfer portal. We broke that story Monday morning. Hysier averaged nearly 16 points a game to go with 4 assists, 3.6 rebounds per game. And, of course, in his final game in a Temple uniform, he had 32 points, which was a single game record for the American Athletic Conference tournament. 6 assists, 5 rebounds in that loss to UAB in that conference title game. He met with, from what we were told, he met with Adam Fisher last week. Sounds like he thought about it again over the weekend and announced his decision on Monday. So, again, I mean, we're stating the obvious here. I mean, to some fans in the Temple fan base, they, you know, again, fandom is what it is. They go back and forth. They waffle back and forth. And some fans think that Temple is going to be, and I'm referring to fans on our message boards or maybe some on Twitter, think that the program is going to be just fine without him. But it's a loss. It's a loss. And again, we'll talk about this more. We'll certainly talk about this more in the mailbag. We have plenty of mailbag questions about this. Where does your mind go from here? We know from year to year now that the possibility of anyone leaving is there. Hysier Miller leaves. Where do they go from here? Kyle, I'll start with you.
They go right to the transfer portal, right? Because I think as it became more and more evident throughout as this year progressed, I don't think they had a great ball handler on this team outside of Hysier Miller, which is why his usage rate was so high and he had to play so many minutes. So this isn't like 10, 15 years ago where you go, okay, starting point guard left, who's next up, like just grinding through, like in today's day and age, you just have to go into the portal and you got to find somebody. Unfortunately, point guard and big man are like the two thing that every team in the world is always looking for because they have the hardest positions to find for, recruit for, develop and retain. But I think the name that's going to come to mind right away for people, and that's probably for a good reason, is Lynn Greer III from St. Joe's.
Right.
Obviously a legacy name. His dad's one of the all-time greats here at Temple. His dad's on Adam Fisher's staff. The reports are that Lynn Greer III left St. Joe's because he wants the ball in his hand, and with Xavier Brown there and then bringing in Derek Simpson today from Rutgers, like he wasn't going to have that ball in his hand. So Temple could definitely present that opportunity. But yeah, it's a loss. I mean, this time a year ago, we had Temple fans complaining, oh, I don't care that Damian Dunn is leaving because he was an infuriating player and blah, blah. And that was an all-conference level player that Temple fans were trying to convince themselves they weren't going to miss. I'm not putting Hysier Miller in the same level as Damian Dunn, because I think Dame Dunn was a very good player here at Temple, and Hysier maybe was just starting to get to that level towards the end with the conference run, the conference tournament run. But yeah, it's a loss. He was a quality starter at the American level, and for a team that struggled for most of the year and got hot towards the end, but still finished under 500, they quality conference level starters don't grow on trees in this current program. So if you think that Hysier Miller was overused, or that he was playing out of position, or that he forced shots and was more volume scorer, that's fine, but it's definitely a loss.
Yeah, bingo. And I mean, the biggest thing too is we've been saying that they need a score, and Hysier kind of turned into that in the conference tournament, like you mentioned, Kyle. But you know, the fact that he kind of turned into that just meant that his stock skyrocketed in those final couple of weeks. So I would not be shocked to see him get some sort of massive deal somewhere because of how well he played. But yeah, I mean, they hit the portal and they need to find a score. And that's the biggest takeaway right now, because that's all you can think of is now you got to keep the guys, you know, like Jordan Riley, like Shane DeZoni, that also started to turn into that. You could kind of see Shane DeZoni start to handle the ball a little bit more toward the end of the year, you know, to varying results. But you could see that as maybe a direction they go. You could see Lingrier the third as maybe a direction they go. But I think Hysier leaving just kind of confirms the direction they need to find. And that's somebody that can get you a bucket like Dame Dunn used to do. Like, can just go ISO if he has to and create his own shot. So that'll be interesting to see who they can get. But Lingrier the third is definitely a way to go.
Well, they needed, I think we've been talking for a while about they needed another ball handler, even if Hysier Miller were staying. Now they really need a ball handler.
Yeah.
Ling could potentially be a fit. I think there's mutual interest there. I will tell you guys that we'll have a story. Maybe by the time the pod comes out, we will have a story for our subscribers at AlScoop.com about potential transfer portal targets. And it's going to be a mix of our own reporting, sourcing, names that can potentially make sense. I think we have a good read on what's going on out there. Again, people tease me for saying this. Things are always fluid, but the story that you see, the names that are going to be there, it's well-sourced. We'll see how this plays out. But again, even if Hysier was coming back, they needed another ball handler. You don't know what you have yet in Quante Berry. You might, if Quante Berry decides to stay, you might have a good developing point guard. He's quick. You know, and you saw a little bit of what he could do on certain occasions. They don't win. I mean, it was a crazy game. A lot had to go right for him. They don't win that game against LaSalle early in the season without him, where they go into triple overtime. Everybody's in foul trouble, but they absolutely need another ball handler. Lynn might make sense. I think he only hit 14 threes all season, so he's not necessarily a prolific shooter, but he's confident getting to the rim. And if he wants the ball in his hands, as Kyle said, he or, you know, a lot of guys would have the opportunity to do that here now. We're obviously going to talk a lot more basketball in the mailbag and answer some of your more pointed questions. Let's talk a little spring football as well. You can check out our story from Saturday's scrimmage. So there have been two spring football scrimmages that have been available to the media in their entirety. Two Saturdays ago, then this past Saturday, I tried to give everybody a pretty detailed breakdown of what we saw. Talked to Chris Wiesehan after that, talked to Eric King, talked to Kevin Terry, talked to Grayson Mainz, the South Carolina transfer. Kevin Terry and Eric King, of course, were guys who redshirted last year. Kevin Terry played in one game. King did not. So we're going to have a little bit on the offensive line here for you. I know I told a couple of our subscribers that I would ask about Zay Baines. We hadn't seen him around in practice. So we are about an hour removed from talking today on Tuesday afternoon to Stan Drayton, Tyler Douglas, and Wisdom Corsi. I asked Stan Drayton about Zay Baines, and he said that he's fine, but he needed to take some time off to get his academics in order. So he's still at the program, but that's why Zay Baines has not been out there. You can check out my story on Grayson Mainz. He's in the mix at center, as is Wisdom Quarshi. So one of my bigger takeaways from this past weekend, and it's kind of an obvious one, and again, talk about this more in the mailbag as well, is Chris Wiesehan seems just a little happier, a little bit smiling a little bit more. I mean, he has 11 guys that he thinks he can count on as guys being in the mix right now. I mean, like, any of us are happier in our jobs if we have the resources to succeed. And obviously they have been beset by injuries, lack of talent. And, you know, again, I don't want to give away the whole story, but if you look at what I wrote on Saturday, Kevin Terry seeing some, again, we'll put this caveat in there. they really say like there's no depth chart right now, and they are factoring guys in with reps, first team, second team, third team. But Kevin Terry seeing a lot of snaps at left tackle with what looks like late March first team. Eric King has been in there. Grayson Mainz has been in there at center. Wisdom Quarshie will be in the mix as well. James Famenu at right tackle. And there are some guys that are healthier now. So I think Chris Wiesenhahn seems a little bit more encouraged by what he has, because again, Rich Rodriguez was in that lineup with injuries. They've had a ton of injuries with Bryce Thoman and guys like that. So we talked to Chris at the end of practice on Saturday, and this is a little bit about what he said about what he's seen from the offensive line so far and about Kevin Terry, he's been high on for a while, a guy from Florida, and about his footwork, about him putting on some weight, and just about what he's seen from the offensive line so far. You're going to rotate a lot of guys in, snapping the ball. Grayson's been in there. Anybody look good at center so far?
Yeah, Grayson's done a nice job. Chris Smith has done a nice job. Wisdom's done a nice job. You know, I got some guys waiting in the wings when they get back into practice that will do that as well. But, you know, pre-practice, everybody does that. So We're always developing that position, right? We never want to get caught without, you know, that ability. No different in baseball. You always want to develop pitchers. Yeah. You always want to develop snappers in football.
What about Kevin more specifically at left tackle? His footwork, his hands, what have you seen from him?
I mean, he's a really phenomenal, unique athlete. We just got to put the weight on him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has triple extensions, just natural, right? His ankles, his knees, his hips, you can see him getting his stance and his ability to move. He's a really good processor. He just needs more reps. He's a bright, bright young man.
When you say you got to get more weight on him, is like you have like an ideal, like 5-10 pounds, like something like that?
Well, he came at 240. He's now 280. So now he's got his next, it's the next Shabazz Ahmed. It's the next Matt Hennessy. You know, those kids that came in at 250, they all had to grow. You know, you look at Luke. Luke was a 254-pound kid. We signed him, and now he's 290. And I think Melvin Ciani's up to 303. He was 269 when he stepped on campus. So those are the guys we're going to get. Those are the guys we're going to develop. And they have to believe in that process.
And then when it comes to Kevin Terry, a guy who has put on some weight, obviously looking to improve his footwork, his hands, a guy that very legitimately could potentially start at left tackle. Again, those of you who know this program know that any of the starting jobs are far from being settled. Chris Wiesenhahn talks about, just like Jeff Stoutland does with the Eagles, position flexibility. You're going to hear that a lot. These position battles are far from being determined in terms of starters. But again, some more talent, some more flexibility here. Here's Kevin Terry answering a couple of my questions from Saturday just about like where he feels he's improved and what's been going on with him at spring ball.
What does an actual college offseason do for you after you come in and play, even if it's just a little bit as a true freshman? What does it do for you just in terms of allowing you to catch your breath, like mentally, physically, and all that stuff?
So first we got to learn. We got to get our bodies right. The main thing that I'm working on is gaining weight. Coach B is big on that. Once your weight's right, your body's going to be right. Then you're going to be able to do more, play harder, and prevent injuries. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll say the offseason is mostly about, getting your mind right, getting your body right, and it's going to lead over to the field.
What's the regimen like for gaining weight? Is it still the same gaining thing weight, of like eating late, eating a ton of calories?
It's just eating a lot of calories, shakes, just tracking your calories, really. You got to just eat a lot and drink shakes.
When you're gaining weight and you're still trying to stay mobile and flexible, is that tricky, or does it literally like help you as you're putting on weight?
I feel like for other people it's different. For me, I was able to gain the weight good. Mm-hmm. I was able to gain good weight, so I didn't really lose too much speed. Mm-hmm. I'm still pretty much the same this spring.
All right, so again, a lot more there. If you check out the site, we'll have our interviews with Eric King. Reporters had a chance to talk to him on Saturday to ask him about what he's been doing at the guard position. Couple of other interesting takeaways from today. We got to talk to Tyler Douglas. I wrote this on Saturday. I think he's probably tangibly a step or two behind Evan Simon and Forrest Brock as a thrower. Again, Clifton McDowell just pieced, left, back in the portal, no longer at Temple. But Tyler Douglas is a pretty good athlete. I mean, when you see him, and one of the cool things to see on Saturday was the quarterbacks went live and they were eligible to be hit. He can really move. You can see why he was partially successful at Ocean Township. I mean, he can really move. He is he moves like a power five quarterback in terms of running the ball, whether he's scrambling, whether he's creating his own space, or whether it's a design run. He's got some really nice ability there. Again, we'll have stuff up by the time you hear this pod. Again, we talked to him earlier today, talked about, you know, his throwing motion, his technique. He's still got some work to do there, but his athleticism pops when you see him on the field. And again, you'll hear from Wisdom Quarshi as well, a guy who told me today, I want to play center. So does Grayson Mainz. So that's good. A lot of competition there. We'll talk some more football in the mailbag. The transfer portal, getting back to women's basketball. And as Piper, Rain Tucker entered the portal, Declan, you said even a couple weeks ago that they were going to need some bigs, and now they really need some bigs.
Yeah, really, really need some bigs. I think the biggest takeaway, though, for Piper was she stays in conference, goes mm-hmm. to USF, presumably gets some money from a program that has been really solid for the past however many years, struggled this year, but now have that sort of front court depth that they've been lacking. But Rain Tucker is, I mean, that was crazy. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize that she had eligibility remaining. Mm-hmm. She has one graduate year now she'll be able to use. She was just very kind of underutilized, it seemed, at times in the offense, which maybe led to some frustration. I don't know. This is purely speculative, but I wouldn't be shocked to see her get some serious traction just because, you know, what she offered on the offensive glass. I mean, Temple was sixth in the country this year in offensive rebounds. Like that happens a lot, in part because of her and in part because of Ines Piper. So, but yeah, you mentioned needing front court depth like that. They have just one player left on the roster that actually played minutes this year, and that's Jaleesa Malina. And to be quite honest, she could not play much in Fort Worth because she was a step behind the rest of the people in the front court. So they're going to need some serious movement out of the transfer portal. And we'll see who they bring in, but they need at least a couple names, and preferably people that can also score on the offensive end and maybe eliminate a little bit of that half-court stagnation we saw toward mm-hmm. the end of the season.
Yeah, and I talked to a couple people about this morning to just get some perspective, and a couple of sources I trust on this. Ines Piper did want to stay, had a good experience at Temple. USF had some NIL money for her. The coach down there is a friend of Diane's, and I don't think it was any sort of discord between her and Diane, but it's an NIL decision. So it's affecting, obviously, we know it affects the women's game, but you know, you hope in the future, if you're a Temple women's basketball fan, that they get some help there. But again, we'll talk about that more as we get into the mailbag here and bring some education to people into the NIL process and where Temple is and where they're not and where they've grown and where they could use some help. But let's get to these mailbag questions, because again, this just gets us back on track for a lot of what you guys want to hear and what you want to know about. First question from Twitter, Owl72. Glenn, one of our longtime listeners, had a chance to connect with him a couple times this year during football season. Appreciate the question, Glenn. Do you think Hysier Miller felt that possible incoming transfers would put pressure on him since it would be his last season? No, not at all. This is a opportunity for him to potentially go into the portal and get some life-changing money. This was not a situation where Hysier felt like incoming transfers were going to take away his starting job or anything like that. I think the Temple tried its best to keep him. He thought about it long and hard and has decided that he's going to leave. So, no, it's not a situation, I feel, where he thinks transfers would be putting pressure on him.
I also want to add on to that last part where you said Temple very much wanted him, because there were people on our boards and people on Twitter saying maybe this is like a mutual parting.
No.
No. No, Temple wanted Hysier Miller back. Temple made an offer and a pitch to have Hysier Miller back. Hysier Miller left.
Well, and to be honest, why wouldn't they, right? Like, you saw it on the court. Right. He was such a big part, not only of that run, but just, like, in the locker room. Like, he became such a presence this year for them. So, I don't know. It would be crazy for them not to want him back, and he's going to be a valuable asset somewhere else.
Yeah, and we talked about this before, too, multiple times. Look at what happens when other things go right around him. When guys are just doing little extra things, diving for loose balls, communicating better, switching on defense, getting out in transition, it helps his game. Again, they didn't win, but again, you know, we've talked obviously at length about how remarkable of a run that was. And yes, at the end of the day, they lost to a much better UAB team that went on to win the league and win the tournament there. But 32 points in the last game, he looked like the player that the staff and the previous staff was hoping for him to be. But yes, as Kyle said, rightfully so. No, this was not like we think we can go out and spend monopoly money in the portal and we can get whoever we want. It's time for you to go. This is not a mutual parting of ways. Our friend Javon Edmonds, former OwlScoop.com staffer, formerly of The Messenger, checking in here. Does Jameel Brown happen this time around? So that's where he refers to Haverford School point guard or combo guard, I guess you could say, who spent two seasons at Penn State. Yeah, it's a possibility. He's in the portal. I think there's mutual interest there. Whether it happens or not, we'll see.
My general impression, and this is not, I haven't spoken to Jameel Brown about this. My general impression is if Temple wants Jameel Brown, they'll get Jameel Brown. I just think there are situations where maybe they're talking to some guys that, look, if there was a finite number of scholarships, which guess what there is as of right now, they might, you know, they have a pecking order, right? Like there's other people you have to talk to before you can kind of make that decision. But yeah, I get the, he's very much in the mix, I would say. I mean, Adam Fisher was one of, if not the primary recruiter for him at Penn State. So
yeah,
that connection is there.
Next question here from our Al Scoop message boards from the screen name Temple Fan Al. Is money the answer to all of our problems? Not all of them, but a fair amount of them.
I was going to say, and it certainly helps.
I never want to devalue anybody's opinion. And there are certainly reasons why you could look at the ability for anybody to transfer at any time now. And the chaos that the transfer portal and NIL have brought into the world of college athletics. You don't have to like it. And I'm not trying to, you know, again, devalue your opinion. I understand where you're coming from, but this is where college athletics is right now. And you can see what happens when you get behind the eight ball in terms of not adapting to change right away. There was one person on Twitter who was going back and forth with me yesterday and saying, oh, I guess Hysier Miller is not loyal. He's not loyal. He backed out on a contract. And I had to explain to him, like, no, he didn't sign a contract. Scholarships are one-year renewable agreements. As far as we know, he is going to do or already has done everything he said he was going to do with the Tough Fund in the NIL space. It's not a thing about being disloyal. If you want to look at this again, and we didn't know this until later on this past season, Hysier Miller, as all of you know, did enter the portal last year during the coaching change. He had interest from Fordham. He had interest from SMU. He went down to SMU and at one point during his visit told the SMU staff, yeah, I'm coming. Came back here, changed his mind. And he passed up more money at SMU to come back to Temple. So loyalty, no. Again, as someone who enjoys covering Temple, would it have been cool to see Hysier Miller come back? Yeah, absolutely. I like him. I think he's a great kid and I want to see him do well in his life. We had him in here on
pretty
the scoop
right after too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I you know, want him to do well in his life, but it's not so much about loyalty. This is not college basketball of the 80s, 90s, even like 3 or 4 years ago. I think loyalty is part of it, sure. But like, again, we'll say it for the 5 millionth time. You have to re-recruit your kids over and over and over again. And you can either adapt to that or, and I'm not saying the Temple's not trying to adapt to it, but I think I've said to you guys before, it would be like me and my full-time job not adapting and like sitting in meetings with you guys. But this whole internet thing, I think we should go back to, we should print 5 days a week. You know, we should, like, you can't like, this is where it is right now. And so money is a significant factor, not just in the NIL space, but investing in facilities. I think football needs help there. I think basketball's got some nice facilities, but yes, money is a root of a fair amount of this. And it's not just one thing. It's one thing that builds on top of another.
I'll also just add, I don't think there's ever a scenario where Temple's NIL or institutional support all of a sudden get to the point where you can be like, okay, well, Duke's coming and offering $2 million. Temple can hold on to Hysier Miller. I don't think it ever gets to that point.
Great point.
I think it just needs to be in the point that in an event that a player leaves, like a Hysier Miller leaves, that you are at least in the conversation for replacements. And this time last year, they weren't. Like the guys that got in, they were fortunate to get like starters and Sam Hoffman and Steve Settle and Jordan Riley with very limited NIL assets. They're a little bit better off now this year. They need to be able to be even more in the conversation, and that's where the NIL money comes in, at least as it is right now, because this is 2024. 3 years from now, who knows? Maybe NIL is more regulated. Maybe they're employees of universities, and this is a completely different issue, and maybe we're all no longer covering sports, and we decide to go into organic blueberry sales. Like,
I like organic blueberries.
Yeah,
I don't. Relocate to Hamilton?
I don't see me doing that.
Do you know where Hamilton is?
No.
Declan, I'm going to just put you on the side of a road in like the little, like, honor system, put money, take blueberries, like huts on the side of the road down to the shore, and you're going to be there and you're just going to be my salesman on the side of the road.
First of all, cruel, because I would have no idea where I am.
Why do you need to know where you are? You're on the side of the road. That's where you are. I'm sorry. Is your job to wander around and give directions? No, your job is to sell my blueberries.
Sell me this blueberry.
Sell me this pen and this blueberry.
I will add, though, it just kind of feels like there are always varying stages to a rebuild, right? Then the first one is creating a product worth investing in. And I think Fisher and the staff did that this year. And now it's time for the fans to invest in what they saw. And we saw that with how the Tough Fun kind of blew up in the end of that conference tournament run. But yeah, of course, money is the answer to competing, like you mentioned, Kyle. I've talked about this 100 times on here, but when we talked to Arthur Johnson in the fall about NIL and how Temple was keeping up, he mentioned their goal is just to compete within the conference, which, you know, is good and all, but they're slowly making strides toward that. And until they do, it's going to be, yeah, money solves it. Money at least helps. You know, you've got a coach you can invest time and effort into. Now you got to invest something else.
Arthur also talks a lot about using NIL for retention. And I just saw 3 big names enter the portal in the last 48 hours. So
yeah.
Maybe Temple's NIL needs to catch up with retention as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yep. Next question here, also from the message boards, from The Hick is the screen name, not a longtime subscriber. Can we expect or anticipate any more defections? Can we expect or anticipate any impending player acquisitions? And what are the reconfigured recruiting priorities? So we've talked a little bit about this, most of this already. Can we expect or anticipate any impending player acquisitions? Of course, they're going to both programs, both the women's and men's programs, are going to be getting players in the transfer portal. Again, I would encourage all of you to check out Kyle's story, which will most likely be out by the time this podcast comes out. And again, that's going to be well-sourced stuff. We're not saying that every single player you see on that list is coming to Temple, but please know we're not just pulling names out of nowhere. We've got a lot of sources. We've been doing this for a long time. And so the names that we have on that list are there for a good reason. What are the reconfigured recruiting priorities? Talked about this a little bit earlier. I mean, they're the same for the most part. I mean, you need a big, and not in the sense that Jameel Reynolds was a big or Mark Jackson was a big back in the 90s. They need somebody who can rebound, set screens. And again, if they do want to go some inside out sets, somebody who can do that much better than an Emmanuel Okpomo, or somebody who can do stuff like that. Can we expect or anticipate any more defections? I think maybe so. And I don't say this to be an alarmist. I would be surprised if it always happens this way. Last week we were talking about the women's program, and literally, I think an hour after we were done recording, that's when Anis Piper had entered the portal. I'd be surprised if we're not talking about another player, or maybe even two, who enters the portal on the men's team.
I think it's a basic probability. Like, in your mind, if you go, okay, I think that person has a 30% chance of leaving. Well, if they all have a 30% chance of leaving, then odds are one of them's leaving.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if a fifth or sixth scholarship shakes free.
Yeah. So
which I think with those reconfigured recruiting priorities, I think you need 2 bigs. I think you need 2 point guards. I think you need a scoring guard. Like,
yep.
You need to recruit an entire team.
Yeah. Yep. Answered the question there perfectly. A few more questions to get to here. These next few are from Twitter. Off the Hook 3, another one of our longtime listeners. Do we know why Clifton McDowell left for the portal? Who on the offense helps with providing firepower? We ranked 109th in scoring offense last year, and the guy who was responsible for 90% of it is now at Rice. So, first question, do we know why Clifton McDowell left for the portal? We talked to, and I say we, meaning reporters in general, I was not on the call when he was on earlier this spring. Do we know why he left for the portal? We haven't talked to him since then.
No.
I don't know if Clifton McDowell came to Temple thinking he was going to just be anointed the starter, and he came in and saw that it really is. I mean, one thing we didn't maybe necessarily say as pointedly, Stan Drayton said today, like, there is no depth chart, and don't read into, yes, when these scrimmages that you've seen over the last 2 weeks have started, yes, Evan Simon's out there. And of course, I'm paraphrasing. He's out there with what looks like the first team offense. It does not mean he's the starter. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that when the portal opens again, that they couldn't go grab somebody else that shakes loose from another program. Now, that person would not have the benefit of being here for spring ball, but anything's on the table. I'm not trying to take anything away from Evan Simon. So I don't know if McDowell came in here thinking he was going to be on easy street and earn the job. That's an unfair assumption to make. could have been personal. I don't know why he left. I know all we know for certain is that it caught the coaching staff off guard. When we were here a couple of weeks ago, reporting on practice over at the Star Complex, he wasn't there. You look around, and they expected him to show up to practice that day. So it caught everybody off guard. Who on the offense helps with providing firepower? Great question, obviously, because E.J. Warner was a record-setting passer. He threw the ball a ton. He had the opportunity to be a record-setting passer, but he's no longer there. If you're looking for firepower, I think you look at Adante Wright. I think you look at, I think, a really intriguing option for them. Reese Clark has really come along. He really looks like, and again, I don't know that I would have said this heading into last season. Yes, we saw him on some jet sweeps and stuff in the spring game, but he's looked really good. He looks like he's in great shape. He actually scored a touchdown this past Saturday on a bit of a trick play, lined up as a fullback, and was really able to get into the end zone in a live period. Obviously, the big question is who's under center. And we don't know that yet. The offensive line looks better. The communication up front looks better. I think I mentioned last week, Stan Drayton, one of the things he said is there haven't really been any lopsided practices so far. It's not like every time we've talked to him, he said, yeah, man, the defense is way ahead of the offense. Again, caveat is they're playing against each other. They're not playing against Oklahoma. They're not playing against Tulane. They're not playing against Tulsa. They're playing against each other. But I think there are options there. You have no sure thing, obviously, going into the season where you say, well, whoever's a quarterback is going to get you 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns on a high volume of throws. But yeah, I think there are some options there, whether it's a Tyree Washington and Antoine Littleton and improved Jaquez Smith. But I'll flip this over to you guys. I mean, who do you see in keeping with off the hook's question here, 90% of that percentage that he came up with, who's filling the cup there in terms of just getting some points, getting some explosive plays?
I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the running back room is going to be better than it was. And I think that coupled with the offensive line makes it more, hopefully, of a more balanced offense. So this question is not as significant as it might have been a year ago when they had to throw the ball 50 times a game. But to who's going to make this offense more explosive from a passing aspect, I think the big guy hasn't played yet this spring. I think Antonio Jones, the transfer from Grambling, can be a little bit of lightning in a bottle. I think he's a faster version of Ahmad Anderson, who had the ability, once he got the ball in his hand, to kind of make plays and get more yards after catch than you would expect. So I think he's an option. I think Tyler Stewart, who Stan Drayton mentioned today, coming in from high school from Georgia, is a potential option. But I'm just expecting this offense to be not necessarily better, because, like, yeah, I think it is hard to replace a prolific passer like that, but just more balanced and maybe not as reliant on those quick, like, hey, I'm going to throw the ball nine times this drives. So I would hope on that. To answer the initial question, I'm sorry, not to backtrack too much, about Clifton McDowell leaving, I don't necessarily fault him, to be honest. Like, yeah, if you think that, hey, look, I'm either, even if I'm neck and neck with Evan Simon, and it sounds like Forrest Brock's a lot better than he was last year. Like,
yeah,
even if I am like neck and neck with these guys, I can't roll the dice, have this go into the fall, lose that competition, and the next thing you know, and not that these are the exact same scenarios, but next thing you know, I'm Anthony Russo at Michigan State, where my last year of eligibility, I'm just sitting on the bench. Like, that helps nobody, especially somebody that's like looking to progress in their career. So, like, if you think there's any chance, or if you thought the probability was you weren't going to start, then, like, let's not waste anybody's time and let me get into the portal sooner than later, so that way I can hopefully find a spot where I can put more film out there.
Agreed. I wrote an article a couple weeks ago for the Temple News about, I legit thought McDowell had a shot at competing for that number one spot. Just watching his film, he was a really, like, physical quarterback, able to, you know, go into contact, see contact. He would have helped the running game, I felt like, and provide a little more balanced attack. So it was surprising, but you're right. Like, if he thought for whatever reason he wasn't going to be able to get that spot, then why stay? Why not take a chance somewhere else? So
even if he thought, like, hey, I'm the favorite, but it's like a 65-35. Like, you never know. Like, they have a relationship with Forrest Brock, or, like, they recruited Evan Simon initially out of high school, like Danny Langsdorf did for Colorado. Like, even if you think there's, like, a chance that you're not going to get that job, like, it's not worth the risk. So, like, I'm going to go find some place where I can go start right away.
Especially in this climate where everybody's looking for a quarterback. Everybody's looking for somebody that they can compete with at every level. So it makes all the sense in the world. But getting back to the other question, I'm interested to see what Landon Morris does. I mean, we saw with DMR and Jordan Smith, like, they like a good physical tight end that can go over the middle. And he's been with the team for a year, so that'll be fun to see what he can do. And John Adams maybe could be interesting. I mean, he really showed up in the middle half of the season before he got hurt. Great story, like you mentioned, too, but he could play. So it'll be interesting to see how he pairs with some of the more speedy guys, maybe in an outside role, but we'll see. I mean,
like we said last week too, that like he's been in uniform, but they're still ramping him up. But he looks, he looks good. I mean, I guess last week over the Star Complex, I mean, we're standing mere feet from him. He was in uniform, wasn't out there, but his spirits are up. Like he's not limping. I mean, he's coming off a broken leg. I mean, coming off a fairly serious injury, but there's no reason to think, barring any setbacks, that he won't be fully ready for preseason camp. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy, again, it happens at Temple, happens all over the place. Walk-ons can contribute. I mean, he was a very good track athlete at Deptford High School, just over the bridge in South Jersey. So I think Kyle put it perfectly. You don't just automatically say, okay, they're going to be better because, you know, they just will be with DJ Warner gone, but there's a chance that they could be a lot more balanced. And I think if we're sitting here in, you know, by November or December later on this year and talking about them winning a sixth or seventh game to become bowl eligible, I think that's going to be one of the big reasons why they are. Next question comes from our message board, sort of similar question from TU1834 is the screen name. I want to be an optimist, but I'm a very casual football watcher with only basic understanding of the game. I would really appreciate an explanation of why something from camp, be it a quote or something you've all seen to practice, should give me reason to be optimistic about the development of the team.
Totally fair question, by the way. Fair question.
I'll go back to, and I think there are a few things, again, caveat that they're playing against each other, so I'm not trying to hype them up. I'll go back to Chris Wiesehan. I think Wies is really pretty honest. I'm not saying last year at this point he was doom and gloom, but he's honest. And the guy just looked, he had a lighter mood about him, and he seemed encouraged. I mean, he can actually see, he can look at Eric King and say, that's why I redshirted this guy. He looks a little bit more ready. Kevin Terry looks good. I have legitimate competition at every spot. And again, as cliche as it sounds, if they're a lot more fundamentally sound on the line, then a lot more things are possible. So if you're looking for a reason to be optimistic, I'd say starts up front. They have more capable options there. Again, how good? I'm not saying that Kevin Terry is going to go out there and look like, you know, like a first round draft pick, but he has the athleticism that you look for, and a guy that they used to be able to recruit and say, this guy's going to learn through his mistakes, but he's got the hands, the feet, the frame that you can put weight on and stuff. So I would say you could be encouraged at this point by a healthier and deeper offensive line.
Yeah. Cause the biggest thing out of camp last year was how improved the offensive line was. And that, I guess, got us optimistic. But then the second they took the field, everybody got hurt. Mm-hmm. So it was like they never had any sort of chemistry or consistency that would have allowed them to show off if they had improved or not. So the fact that they, like you mentioned, are healthier and have more depth at each position, and not just, you know, they're trying to learn center on the fly, or they're trying to learn these different positions in the middle of a game, I think is a big part of it as well. So it's just little things like that. It's seeing how fast somebody looks regardless of who's lining up next to them. It's, you know, seeing if a quarterback is making a right read depending on what the defense is giving them. All these different game scenarios that will happen in the fall, happen in the spring, albeit against competition that, you know, they've been working against for months. So it is, you know, you can't put too much stock into it, obviously, but it is like very valuable information as a baseline heading into the summer and fall. So I think that's the biggest reason why you should take things away from spring camps.
Just to not say the same thing for a third time, I'll give a different answer. I mean, I think there's two things. If you go back to our past segment, for an offense that has a lot of question marks, that we're talking about, like, who's going to be the quarterback? Are they going to be able to overcome this? We named a lot of weapons, to be honest. Like, there are like a fair amount of guys that you can be like, okay, they have some established running backs. They have a lot of options in the tight end room. Like, a wide receiver, Dante Wright's done a lot at the college level. Zay Baines has contributed to the college level. But I think the biggest sense of optimism, if you really want to be optimistic about this season, which I'm not necessarily sure if I am, but if you want to be optimistic, I think on the other side, the defensive line has a lot more depth than it did. You bring in, you're getting guys back healthy like KJ Miles and Demarek Morris and Alan Hay, but you're also brought in guys like Chroma and Jason Moore, and I'm missing somebody else, like Cameron Stewart from Rutgers, like guys that are going to be able to kind of fill in that four-man front that he said, like, oh, he has a basic fundamental understanding of football. On the offensive side, the offensive line doesn't work. It's hard to have a good offense. On defense, it's the defensive line. Like, because if you have to start bringing guys in from those other levels to kind of just keep that front, like, intact, then you're screwed in other aspects of the game. So they're able to actually kind of stop the run with a four-man front, still get a pass rush just from the defensive line. That opens everything else up and makes the rest of the defense easier. So I would think they did a good job of just at least addressing depth on both sides of those lines.
Yeah, maybe a Trey Thomas and a DeJuan Black. Maybe again, I think.
Guess what? You don't have to stop the run anymore, guys. Like, you're just pass rushing again.
Exactly.
Which is what you're good at.
Exactly. Precisely. Last mailbag question here to close things out, and this will generate some good conversation. And John Palmieri on Twitter asked this question, and I don't say this in any sort of snarky way, but I think one of the, I'm not trying to sound, I don't think any of us are trying to sound holier than thou, but one of the things that we do want to do with this podcast is to try to educate people. So John's question on Twitter is, why isn't the tough, I'm reading this exactly as it's written, why isn't the tough NIL fund soliciting every damn service provider, consultant, attorney, contractor, supplier who does business with Temple? It is a no-brained, and I think he meant to say no-brainer. John, I'll say this to you, and then I'll kind of defer to Kyle and Declan for the rest of this. The Temple University Alumni Association claims to have 370,000 people in its network, last time I checked. And at the end of the day, one person came forward to start a collective. There are other fan bases who have multiple collectives. Again, as Kyle said before, I don't think we're ever going to see a time where any sort of Temple collective, be it the Tough Fund or anything else in the future, is outbidding a Duke collective or a Kentucky collective or an Alabama collective, but you want to take discernible steps. The Tough Fund is run by one person. It's run by Andy Carl, and we've known Andy for a while. He's a passionate Temple sports fan. He's nuts about it, but he's not getting paid for it, and it's being run by one person. Andy or anybody else in his position would not have the time to go out and find, quote, every damn service provider, consultant, attorney, contractor, supplier who does business with Temple. And it is indicative of how far behind. I think if you were to talk to Andy himself, Andy would tell you it's insane that I'm the person doing this. And I'm not trying to detract from the work that he's done or the service component to it. And that's how they want to be different, which I think is cool, but it's not that simple. And it's indicative of where Temple needs to get to. I know Andy enjoys it. I think it's purpose-driven work for him, but he's one person doing it for free. So that is the answer to your question, but I'll ask you guys if you want to chime in on this as well.
Yeah, that's where I think that Temple, the university, has kind of dropped the ball a bit, where whether it's institutional outreach or institutional advancement or relationship with other, you know, third-party sources, I don't think it's fair to put that on Andy. And trust me, I try to put a lot on Andy in my life, but I don't think it's fair to put that on Andy. Like, Andy, you need to reach out to every seven-figure, 10-figure corporation in the tri-state area and ask them why aren't they donating money to Temple and blah, blah, blah. I think that Temple should be in a partnership with the collective. Temple can't do everything with NIL, but it can definitely steer people towards the Tough Fund. You as a subscriber, listener, supporter of Temple Athletics can direct people to the Tough Fund. People that have connections with other companies, hey, maybe we want to start getting charitable donations out there. Maybe we want to start utilizing student athletes to promote our brand, can direct people to the Tough Fund. And the fact that, quite frankly, it's been Andy Carl and a handful of other people that have felt the need to represent their university and go out there and solicit donations and talk to pretty much anybody that wants to talk to them about it and give these presentations to people that want to know more about NIL as volunteers, as uncompensated volunteers, is great for them, but it should be a larger operation. I think Andy would be the first one to tell you that. So comments like this, I don't know if they come from a place of legitimate, like, hey, why aren't they doing this? Like, I think if you asked Andy what his number one complaint about being an NIL collective operator would be, is that he gets frustrated when people think that he doesn't think of these things. Because, like, yeah, if it was as simple as just like checking a box or sending an email to money@comcast.com, then, like, yeah, Andy would send that email, right? But it's not that easy. It's more meetings and more conversations, and there's only 168 hours in a week, and Andy doesn't have the bandwidth to do that at all. So if you have any great ideas or great leads, John Palmieri, please contact Andy.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think one of the biggest things that happened for the Tough Fund since its inception was that run in the conference tournament where people were like, hey, for every point, or, you know, for every win, I'm going to donate X amount of money. And they tweeted about it, and they got people excited, and people started engaging and, like, learning what the Tough Fund was. And whoever runs the Twitter account, you guys probably know I don't, for the Tough Fund, was, like, commenting under people's tweets, and, like, Kevin Nagandi posted it. And they got however many impressions that they reached. But it got people to think about the Tough Fund, and it got people to see what the Tough Fund does. And that's the easiest way to do it is visibility and getting it. What?
Breaking news.
Oh, I thought I was saying something wrong.
Jaleel White has entered the transfer portal.
That's insane. Wow.
Oh, wow. Now I got to brief that.
Did he just announce it?
It's verbal commits as it.
Mm. Well, and to close things out here, and as Kyle was about to say, we called this about 40 minutes ago. We said that we'd be mildly surprised if by the time we were recording with you guys next week that there wouldn't be more transfer portal news. And just as we're about to end this week's episode of The Scoop, Verbal Commits has just reported that Jaleel White has entered the transfer portal. So yeah, the roster continues to take shape.
When we talked earlier that, hey, there's guys that you think there's 30, 40, 50% chance they were going to leave, he 100% was one of those people. Like, yep. It was kept hearing that it was up in the air, that he was thinking about it, and here it is. I mean, he's a guy that, honestly, I was a little surprised didn't enter the portal last year to at least see what was out there when there was the whole regime change. So,
yep.
Yeah.
So, there you have it. Tyson Miller and Jaleel White.
Wow.
Now in the transfer portal.
Wow. Live on The Scoop.
Yeah.
How neat is that?
Breaking news.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Ramir had to step away to do some work and is now back to close out the episode.
I mean, do we want to flesh that out more? Like, what type of loss is this for Temple?
Yeah. Well, it's, I think this is a big one too. And again, I think most of you would agree with this. When he is healthy, obviously, you just lost your most capable rebounder, and you lost a guy who had some upside. I mean, I think we can say that, you know, from the time he was in high school, I mean, he had the meniscus injury. He's had shoulder soreness. He's had shoulder issues. And of course he injured and re-injured the ring finger on his right shooting hand. I don't think that Jaleel White was ever going to become a 40% shooter from three, but yeah, this is a loss. Now you have to go find a guy similar to him. Again, any coach would love a guy with size and length who's 6'7", 6'8", and you could maybe step out and hit a shot. But yeah, you just lost probably your best on ball defender
easily.
So yeah, this is a loss for them.
You know whose time might be calling right now with the recent departures. People are still saying Zion Stanford, you might have a massive role next year. When you kind of like forecast rosters and you go, okay, how's Zion getting the starting lineup, or how's Jaleel getting the starting lineup? I think Zion might have the path to 30 some minutes a game next year, the way things are shaping up.
And he kind of earned it, I think, in Fort Worth. Like, he looked really good. And I know he had struggled for most of conference play, but it only takes a couple games to really figure out what you're doing, right? So maybe that was a sign to that he is ready to take on that kind of load.
Is that what they say? Is it only takes a couple games to figure out what you're doing in basketball?
I always say it, so.
Okay.
Who are these day people?
You know.
As the late, great Chuck Newman used to say in our sports writing class when I was in college 2,000 years ago, who are these day people?
Yeah.
That's what, you know, them
people much smarter than me.
I'll give Zion his credit. Again, he was getting, I think all these guys in the roster were getting some hard coaching, and Adam Fisher, I'm sure, curtailed part of what he would say to Zion when he would talk to reporters. But he said, yeah, you need to work harder, rebound better. But yeah, he looked like a more comfortable, more intense player. I mean, he has that stop and go touch that showed itself a little bit more. So I think Kyle's on point. You see, I think he was going to have a larger role, but now, as Kyle said, now he really, really has a chance to really have a much more of a role that they need. But yeah, I think this is a this is a loss for him.
Huge loss. I mean, it really is. It'll be interesting to see who they bring in to fill that role. I mean, yeah, your mind, at least my mind, instantly goes to what does that mean for Dylan Bettee now? A little bit.
Well, again, I think Dylan Bettee, Aiden Tobias, and I think Dylan even more so than Aiden, I think Dylan Bettee is a little bit more college ready in terms of, and not, Aiden's a very good athlete. Aiden, yeah. Both these guys will benefit from getting in to a weight room, but yeah, Dylan Bettee has to help you right away. I mean, again, Ari Rosenfeld, who sees a hell of a lot more basketball than we do, said on our podcast that was several weeks ago that he comes in maybe as one of the best athletes in the conference right away. And that's Ari's, those are Ari's words, not ours. But yeah, it puts more emphasis on everybody, on Zion Stanford, provided Zion stays. And if you're a Temple's coaching staff, I'm sure you're making every effort to ensure that he stays. And but yeah, a great point. Puts more emphasis on what Dylan Bettee and really someone like Aiden Tobias and too. I think that sometimes when you talk to the coaches, even just casually, they'll say, yeah, well, these guys are still freshmen. They still have to come in and learn. They're different players. I mean, right now, Aiden Tobiasen is a better shooter than Jaleel White right now. And I'm not trying to take a shot at Jaleel on the way out, but Aiden Tobiasen can really shoot the hell out of the ball. But he's got to get stronger. But yeah, it puts that multidimensional, whatever they're losing in Jaleel now has to be filled in other ways, whether that's an impact player in the portal right away or a collective effort of some sort.
Well, and it makes getting somebody that can rebound even more important now too. So that'll be interesting to see if it shifts their mindset at all now that, you know, you lose Sam Hoffman and you lose Jaleel White out of that sort of front court role.
It's going to be a long 6 weeks is what I'll say.
Yeah.
Long 6 weeks.
Yes, it will.
Well, buckle up, everybody. The portal's getting interesting now. Thanks for sticking with us for another episode. Of course, like we said, stay tuned to the podcast next week. And even before that, we will have a story up on the site by the time you guys hear this podcast, some well-sourced stuff about some names in the portal that will make sense for Temple. So be sure to check out Kyle's story. We'll talk to you guys soon.